session number 17605, reel 2.
Mr. Evans, reel 2.
Yes, everybody knew of Guy Gibson. Of course, he was very famous for the Dambusters raid.
Did you realise that he'd been lost on that raid?
Not till we got back. We got back to debriefing, and it was reported at debriefing that he hadn't returned, and of course they kept hoping that he'd turn up somewhere, but he didn't. He'd been killed with his navigator. There were two of them on the Mosquito.
Did it affect morale at all, do you think?
Not particularly. He just got on with... he was just another one missing. It's there were so many going that beds were emptying and filling in the barracks that you got used to the idea that certain people didn't come back, and that was... You got on with what you had to do.
When Bonham Carter took over the plane, did it mean that your pilot was left behind?
Or? No, our pilot went with us. He sat in the spare seat, and he sat normally where the engineer would sit. And we carried 8 on that trip instead of 7.
The 5th raid was on Wilhelmshaven, 5th yes. of October. Mm. Does that stand out?
Not particularly, no. It was fairly uneventful, I think. I can't remember any particular instance of that trip. It was... the port area we were bombing, obviously, to knock out the port installations.
Was that a daylight raid?
No, night time. The nights are marked in red, and the daylights are marked in black. Oh, it's fading a bit on the logbook.
Number 6 on Bremen, 6th of October?
Yes, that was interesting. We were attacked by jet night fighters. Which we'd never seen before. We were quite interested when we got back at debriefing. They were quite interested to hear that we'd I would think they explained that what they were. We weren't quite aware of it. They came in very high above us, shut off, and then dived through the formations, and then opened up the jet engines, or appeared to open up the jet engines way below us. It was all over very quickly, but it was a most unusual attack.
Had you heard of jets at that time?
We'd heard of them, but we weren't terribly aware of them because they were normally used in daylight. We'd not heard of jets being used at night. Whether it was an experiment of some kind, I don't know.
Did you see anything of the attackers?
No, no. One was just aware of firing and general mayhem, but it was... not aware of any of seeing a shape or a form of anything.
Before you set off on a raid, did you get a special air gunner's briefing?
Yes, we attended a briefing. The navigators and the skipper attended one briefing, and the gunners and the rest of the crew attended another briefing, and then we all attended the main briefing. And on the main briefing, the target was unveiled. It was usually on the a large board at the end of the room, covered over, and then everybody came in, the station commander, the squadron commanders, and we were briefed on the raid, and they indicated at that time where we were going, and then the route was shown on the map, and we were given briefings by the Met people, the gunnery leader, the bombing leader, on the various aspects of the raid and what was expected of the raid. Weather conditions and that kind of thing, cloud base.
And Operation Number 7 was on Flushing?
Yes, that was the... there were gun concentrations, gun emplacements we were after. They were holding up an Allied advance there, and... I believe it was the Canadian First Army we were bombing very close to troops, and we had to be rather careful where we dropped them.
Number 8 was on Brunswick.
Brunswick, yes. Just a normal raid again. Nothing particular. Fairly long trip, I think, Brunswick. It was the mind dims of the actual incident, particular incident. I don't remember anything on Brunswick that of any great moment.
You've put in brackets in your logbook two fighters.
Yeah, we were attacked by two night fighters there, but we shooed them off and we weren't hit, and we more or less sort of accepted that as par for the course. Flak, I found, was more dangerous than fighters.
Were German night fighters easily shooed off?
Which very difficult to hold a target at night in the dark when both of you are doing several hundred of miles per hour. You very quickly miss each other or lose each other. They were vectored onto us by ground stations, and of course they obviously tried to hold you within their range, but very difficult at night.
Was there ever any danger of your running out of ammunition?
The occasion never arose, actually, because the theory was, as I mentioned before, that good gunners didn't fire too much. It should be a small amount of fire and effective, and better still if one didn't fire and avoided the confrontation. There was a certain manoeuvre if you were attacked by fighters. The theory was that if you were attacked by fighters from the rear, the rear gunner took control of the aircraft and the skipper acted on his instructions, and there was a manoeuvre called a corkscrew, and as the fighter reached this position, which was roughly 600 yards away from where he was approaching, one went into this corkscrew, which put so much deflection on his shots that he was very unlikely to hit you.
And number 9 was Nuremberg.
Yeah,
on 14th of October.
That was the worst raid that ever went on. It was.
Sorry, it was the 19th of October.
Yes, it was a very heavily defended target, and of course a very long trip. I think it was nearly 8 hours, and it was right in the south of Germany. I rather recall we flew in over Switzerland. We dog-legged in over Switzerland, and we homed in off a lake in Switzerland and then carried on south into Nuremberg, and extremely heavy flak. They had, I understand, it was what they had, a box barrage there, which was guns firing at predicted heights, and it was a case of Russian roulette if you got through. Extremely heavy flak. I was extremely frightened on that trip.
Did you see any of the Allied planes coming down?
Oh, lots of them. Every trip you saw that. It was very normal for every trip to see aircraft going down. I think hardly a squadron went that didn't lose aircraft on every trip. Well, one never came through totally unscathed. We actually... we only ever had one trip where we came back on 4 engines. We were always damaged by flak.
Was morale in the unit shaken by that notorious raid on Nuremberg?
No, I don't think so. Maybe it was only... Maybe the impression I got was not the impression others got, but it certainly frightened me. It was... it was a case of, you know, that's the job you're doing. What's the next one?
Was it just flak or did
flak?
No fighters.
Very heavy flak. No, normally where you get very heavy flak, you don't get fighters because they can't use both with the danger to their own aircraft.
You told me about some of the specific targets like troop concentrations and places which were holding up the Canadian advance. But when you attacked a German city, what did you know about the specific target there?
Well, they normally told us what the target was. It was usually things like ball bearing factories, that kind of thing, and industry generally, or either dock installation or industry.
And then operation number 10, Flushing, again.
That was again in support of advancing troops.
Then you put 25th of October sortie check. What does that mean?
That's a sortie check to check that everything's okay with the aircraft. We normally flew sortie checks and to make sure everything was functioning well, and it was usually short of up to an hour, and we'd do a general check. Each member of the crew would check his equipment.
This was a periodic thing, was it?
Oh, yes, yes. Not so much as we got on the squadrons. We didn't do too many of them because you were, by that time, fairly experienced, and most of the equipment was of the highest standard because they were frontline equipment.
How did you find the ground crews who were servicing you?
Oh, excellent. It was like a family atmosphere. They were as committed as we were. It was, in fact, I think they were a bit proud of their crews. And, of course, we were very grateful for what they did for us, for the aircraft in good condition. And we obviously, there were times when there were very pleasant circumstances, like people had been sick in areas and it wanted cleaning and that kind of thing. So it was a case of good relationships all round.
Then number 11 was on Bergen.
U-boat pens, yes. We were bombing the U-boat pens of Bergen, and we were told that the area was surrounded by civilian houses and we had to be very, very careful where we bombed. In fact, they told us that there'd be very severe repercussions if we bombed outside the area. I think it was 1,000 square yards we were bombing in, and in point of fact, we came home without bombing because we couldn't get onto the target, and I think weather conditions weren't very good. I recall we went round three times trying to get an aiming point, but we couldn't get an aiming point.
What was the general advice about going round more than once?
Well, the general advice is bomb the target. They wanted the target bomb. There's not much point in all that cost of you going there with a bomb load and bringing it back home again. It was, if humanly possible, bomb the target. But in the case of Bergen, they were so explicit about not bombing the Norwegian houses that it was preferred you brought them home than take a chance on disturbing relationships with an ally.
Then number 12 was on Hamburg, is it?
Yes.
It says Homburg in your...
Homburg, book, yes, that's
is
right.
Is that the same as...
No, not Hamburg, no. Homburg is another place. It was, industry we were bombing there.
Any memories of that?
No, not particularly. The time fades these memories. I found it just a straightforward, normal raid, nothing untoward.
Was there any set pattern about how often you should do a raid?
No. It's weather conditions that dictated the number and length of raids. It was they obviously look for clear places where cloud base was good and weather conditions generally were good, and raids were selected from those areas. But you could do two or three consecutive nights if conditions were good, and then perhaps if weather closed in, you could spend a day or a week or even longer waiting for weather conditions. Lots of raids were scrubbed just as you were ready to take off because weather conditions had changed, and you got such heavy concentrations of aircraft over the target that it became extremely dangerous if the weather closed in, you began to run into each other. And of course, you bombed in layers, and it was very difficult not to be dropping them on the fellows down below.
And number 13 was on Dusseldorf.
Yes. typical raid again. It's I don't recall anything in particular. It's there were none of them particularly pleasant. They were heavily defended, these targets. Dusseldorf was a major city and was heavily defended. It was nothing I recall specifically about Dusseldorf, just it was another raid.
And now we come to the one where you were shot down. Mm. This is Operation Number 14 on the 6th of November. Can you tell me about that?
The Ems-Weser Canal. We were going to breach the canals because the canals were being used to bring up heavy equipment and supplies to the Normandy front, and we were to breach the canals in order to disrupt their transport. Target was we recall that the very close to the target appeared to be an airfield lit up with aircraft taking off, fighter aircraft taking off, and it was rather unusual to see an airfield lit up. Whether they panicked and realised there was a raid coming on and sort of took a chance on lighting up the airfield, but it was most unusual anyway. That's there were plenty of fighter aircraft around, and of course we bought it.
What exactly happened?
Well, first thing that happened was we were hit very badly from underneath, and I suspect it was I didn't see anything. I suspect it was one of these guns with the aircraft, the ME-110s with the upward-firing guns. They'd become quite popular then, and they flew underneath you and fired upwards. The guns were sort of fixed for an upward-firing position, and we got quite severely hit. Do you want my personal recollection of that? After being so badly hit, the first hit, it blew my controls away. I couldn't operate the turret. I tried to operate it by hand, but it wouldn't operate. I opened the doors, and fortunately, one door was opened into the fuselage. There were two doors, two small doors, that operated from the middle. One was I got open, and I managed to get into the fuselage, and she'd obviously been very badly hit. When I got into the fuselage, I met the wireless operator who was panicking, and I met the mid-upper gunner. But as the aircraft was still flying, I decided that I should try and get through on the intercom and see what was happening. It would appear that the rest of the crew went out on that attack, on that first attack. I plugged into the intercom. I stepped to one side, to the opposite side to the escape hatch. The wireless operator came with me, and the mid-upper gunner was standing in the middle of the fuselage, and at that moment the second attack came in. Trying to think, actually. That came, seemed to be right down the middle of the fuselage through the bomb bays, and it killed the mid-upper, and the wireless operator panicked and passed out on me. I jumped for the main exit on the side of the aircraft, opened the door, let the door go. The wind took the slipstream, took the door away, and I was left with a problem with the wireless operator, what to do. So I dragged him. The aircraft was still flying, but the fuel tanks were up and flames were licking along the side of the aircraft. I dragged the wireless operator to the step, and he had his chute on. He had a chest pack, And I dragged him till I got him sort of one leg in, two leg, an arm and a leg out, and an arm and a leg in, and then I got my foot behind him and I pushed him out, and away he went. And then the aircraft went into a vertical dive and it picked me up from the escape hatch right up in the corner of the aircraft where I was sort of pinned. And I thought, well, you know, the luck of the draw, this is the end of that story. I just couldn't move because of the G-force, and I could see the door more or less down below me, but I couldn't make any effort to get out. And for some reason, the aircraft banked, and as she banked, it released the G-force from me. I dropped to the floor and jumped out through the escape hatch.
What was your descent like?
Quite uneventful, really. It was rather odd. It was, I have a feeling that I hit the tailplane coming out, because something hit me in the back. I was doubled up, and something hit me in the back and straightened me out, and I had a rather painful back afterwards. And I think what happened when she was diving, and I the escape hatch on a Lancaster is very close to the tail, and my impression is I caught the tailplane. Then I was clear, and there seemed to be a lot of aircraft buzzing about, and I could see fires down below. And it's a rather strange experience. You eventually look up and you see these very fine cords that are holding you from eternity, and it's you sort of freeze a bit. And then eventually I came down. I was a little bit lucky again, because in lots of parts of Germany they'd sunk trees into the ground with they'd sharpened the ends of them. Poles they were that they'd sunk into the ground for aircraft, for people coming down on parachutes, got impaled on them. I missed those by, I don't know, 10 feet or so, and landed on a fairly soft ground. Hid my parachute and took off.
Were you anywhere near the Weserems Canal?
Don't know where I was. It's you lose a completely sense of direction. I don't think I was a long way away, but I came down near Osnabrück, which is not a long way away.
What was your plan?
Well, I suppose my plan was to try and get to the Allied lines, but it's virtually impossible in the middle of Germany, and it's right in the heart of Germany, and the kind of, it was very bad weather. It never stopped raining from the minute I got down. It was very cold, and laying up during the day and travelling at night. I think I was 3 days on the loose, and eventually the weather got to me. I was going to be incapacitated by the weather if something didn't happen, and I wandered up to a farm eventually, and they were more startled than I was, and eventually they called the police, and away I went. That was the end of my trip.
I think I noticed earlier from your notes that you were somewhere near a sensitive base.
I hid out one night. One day laying up, and I found that I watched jet fighters taking off, and I thought to myself, well, not a very safe place to be hiding here, so I, the first possible moment, I evacuated the area.
Had you had anything to eat during the 3 days?
No, we had a small pack that we took with us, which consisted of concentrated food, which don't know how long it was supposed to last, but I didn't find any crops or anything to eat. It was in November, and it was very little growing, and I suppose for the length of time I was out, the pack was sufficient.
So you just gave yourself up to the farmer?
I had to, finally. On the third day, I was beginning to feel pretty rough.
What happened once the authorities arrived?
Oh, my feet never touched the ground. I was handed over first of all to what turned out to be a forest warden. He had a resplendent uniform, but he turned out to be a forest warden, rather an aggressive man, and he took me to a pub to show me off to his pals, and then eventually I was picked up by an Air Force unit, and I was then taken, it was rather unusual actually, I don't know why, I was then taken to a roadblock, which was on one of the canals, I think it was the Dortmund-Ems canal, and it was one end of a bridge, and I spent several days in there with an American fighter pilot who was badly burned, and two American fighter pilots. One was okay. He came in after me, and then this other fellow badly burned, and we stayed in this block house for about. I think we were there about 2 or 3 days, and then eventually we were shipped off to the interrogation centre at Dulag Luft.
Had you come across much hostility from the civilian population?
No, not too bad. We didn't have a lot of contact with them except when we were travelling. I found more hostility when I was a prisoner and we were travelling on the long march in the winter of 1944, because we were more in contact with them. But during that period, no, it was we didn't see an awful lot of civilians. Saw them on the train coming from where I was to Dulag Luft, and not too much aggression. I wasn't aware of any particular aggression. They obviously weren't very pleased with us. And they knew. They used to inquire what we were, and they heard we were flyers. We were known as Terrorfliegers, which was this business the Germans had put out that we were flying gangsters.
What happened to you at Dulag Luft?
Well, I was put in solitary confinement there, and I spent 21 days, I think, in solitary confinement, being brought out for questioning, and. And, you know, the usual name, rank and number. But it was surprising how much they obviously had a lot of information about us, and they fed you a bit of information to impress you how much they knew. And they were rather interested at the period I came down on a new piece of equipment that we had called Village N equipment, which was a new gun sight. Which I didn't know very much about because we hadn't been equipped with it. But they seemed quite interested in that, and I suppose being a gunner, they thought I would know more about it than the rest of the crew.
So what were your tactics during the...
My tactics were to keep quiet and give them name, rank and number. They didn't get too aggressive. They started off being aggressive. When they first